Okay, good evening, everybody. So a couple of shailas for tonight. So here they are. Shaila number one is as follows. A guy in the yeshiva said to me as follows. He said, "Hi, Rabbi. Sometimes on my late night walks," it's a fellow in the yeshiva that likes to take very, very late night walks in Washington Heights, in the Bronx, in wherever he feels like going. And I sometimes worry for his safety, but he doesn't appear to worry much for his safety. So he says, "Sometimes on my late night walks, I run into homeless people and they ask for money. Usually when they ask what they will use the money for," because he does ask them, "What will you use the money for?" "They say food, but I suspect that more often than not, they plan to use it for drugs." He actually said once, he was walking and someone said, "Can I have $10? And the fellow said to the guy, "What do you want it for?" And the guy said, "Cocaine." And the fellow said, "Where can you get cocaine for $10? You know, that was his first kasha. Okay, but... And then he writes, "As you know from our recent discussion, drug dealers do end up with lots of cash." What he's referring to over there is he was once walking and he saw a drug dealer drop cash all over the floor, and he started helping to pick up the cash. And then he started thinking, "I have a shaila. Am I allowed to help a drug dealer pick up cash?" I'm like, "No, because he probably will think you're stealing it and he will shoot you." He said he actually did appear angry at first, and then when he realized I was just collecting it for him to give it back to him, he was very appreciative and he was very nice about it. Anyway, "More recently, I've been asking homeless people if there is any food I can buy for them. If a homeless person asks me to buy them a slice of pepperoni pizza, like it happened the other night, is there a basa b'chalav problem? Or do we say mitzvos lavli hanus nitnu? Or would we say that because the homeless person will be machzik tova, that's an independent hanah from the mitzvah? Would it matter if the pepperoni was probably mostly pork and only me with beef? Or would the fact that if you can look really closely, you can probably see some differences in the texture mean that the beef is nicker?" So that is shaila number one. If a homeless person asks you for a pepperoni pizza, are you allowed to buy him a pepperoni pizza? Shaila number two. A Talmud of mine recently got engaged, and right before he got engaged, he called to tell me the good news that he's been dating somebody very seriously and that he was about to get engaged. And he was introduced to the... I asked him, "How did you meet the girl?" He said, "Well, that's actually what I'm really calling about." He was introduced to the girl by a shadchan who he had never heard of, but called him out of the blue one day. The shadchan called him out of the blue and started asking him, "What are you looking for? And what are you interested in?" And the shadchan set him up like almost immediately with this girl, and it went very smoothly. After three dates, they called the shadchan, yes, three dates, and then they were off to the races, and that was it. That was the shadchan's entire involvement, and it was great, right? It was a dream come true. But as he started to tell people that he was seeing somebody seriously, they often would start to ask who the shadchan is. And he would always say, and he noticed that as soon as he would tell people, the reaction was oftentimes along the lines of, "Oh, I didn't know you're such a fancy guy. I didn't know you're such a high roller." And he said, "Like, what do you mean?" And they said, "Well, that's not a cheap shadchan." And he said, What? How much does that shadchan cost? She just called me out of the blue. I don't even know who she is." And they said, "Yeah, that shadchan, on average, asks for $7,000 from the chassan side and $7,000 from the kala side, and that's her fee for writing the shidduch." So he did not know that, and he does not come from a wealthy family, and he was not does not know how to break that to his parents that it's going to be $7,000 for the shadchan fee. He just engaged the shadchan in the conversation because she called him. So he wants to know what, if anything, his obligation is. Okay, so shaila number one is if a homeless person asks you for a pepperoni pizza, or a drug dealer for that matter, asks you for a pepperoni pizza, are you allowed to go buy them pepperoni pizza? And shaila number two is, you're not eating pepperoni pizza there, right? No. Okay, shaila, by the way, I just noticed 16 Handles closed. Anyone notice that? There's a sign that store for rent. I'm so upset. That's like the only place I go here. Oh, that's it. I'm going to Israel next week. Actually, I'm going to Israel next week, but that's nothing to do with that. Okay, so that's shaila number one. Shaila number two is about paying the shadchan when you didn't enlist the shadchan's help. So people can vote on the Zoom, but first, more importantly, the in-person voting. All those who prefer to talk about pepperoni pizza for a homeless man? Okay, all those who prefer to talk about paying the shadchan? Okay, it looks like a large majority for paying the shadchan in person. Let's see what the online vote is. It's hard to run a phone. What did I do here? I don't know how to do this. I think we're just going to go with...
Number two is heavily.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, so Morty with the save. Okay, so paying the shadchan. So let's get to that one. So first of all, is that a thing that you have to pay a shadchan, or is it just like a nice thing? You know, like if someone sets you up, so I don't know, send them flowers for Shabbos or something, right? Is that it, or is there an actual obligation to pay a shadchan? So I think it's helpful to think about it. Let's actually take a step back. There is definitely a mitzvah to be mezavig zivugim, right? There's definitely a mitzvah to try to be involved in shiduchim. The Shulchan Ezer says that it's a kim d'arais of being mezdabik b'shchina, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mezavig zivugim, and the Gemara tells us in many places, mahu afata, that how you mezdabik b'shchina, you can't, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is an eish uchla, he's an all-consuming fire, how could you possibly be mezdabik in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So mahu afata, you mimic his midos, you mimic his behaviors, mahu malbisharu. You do things that Hashem does, and then you connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a shadchan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the shidduch of Adam and Chava, and therefore we're supposed to be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, when it comes to shadchanus money, there's an entire chapter of the Sefer Nisun Kehilchasa about the details of shadchanus payments, which gives you the impression that there's a lot written in poskim about it. And if you look around, there is a lot written in poskim about it. Many poskim write that paying a shadchan is, in addition to whatever halachic obligation there is, it's a great skula for having children. In Maisa Ish, volume 1, page 215, says that it's a great skula for having children. Others suggest it's a great skula for shalom bayis. The Nitei Gavriel writes this way in his Sefer on Tanoim. He has all Sefer on Tanoim, he has all Sefer on everything. And the Sefer Nisun Kilchso also talks about this idea that it's a skula for shalom. So a good thing, right? A very very positive thing. It's mahu afata. It's a skula for all sorts of good things, having children and shalom bayis. The Darkei Tshuva discusses, there are a lot of, sort of interesting discussions around shiduchim, so just to mention some of them. Darkei Tshuva discusses whether you're allowed to be a shadchan for a non-Jew. I had this shaila once. Someone had a coworker, in one job, and he had a coworker in a previous job, and he's like, these two would get along great. They were both Irish Catholics, they were both whatever, but these two would get along. Gabe, your shaila was outvoted. We didn't. Okay, so I gave it away. So these two would get along great, and now you wanted to know, can you make a shidduch between these two people? So Darkei Tshuva discusses this. Netziv discusses Lifnei Iver by being Meshadech non-religious Jews, meaning if, let's say, you make a shidduch between two people who you're pretty sure are not going to keep Taras HaMishpacha, so you're allowed to do that. Is that Lifnei Iver on the Yisr Nida? All sorts of fascinating discussions relating to Shiduchim. There's a discussion in Sun Kilchus. You have one shadchan that sets up a couple and they go on a few dates and they break up, and then they go out with a whole bunch of other people, and then they decide, you know what, let's get back together, and then they ultimately get married. So do you still have to pay the shadchan because the shadchan set it up in a way that didn't lead to the marriage? There's all sorts of discussions when you have multiple shadchanim. How do you divide it? And the Pesachei Tshuva and Ebenezer Siman Nun Sivkat Tazayin discusses a family member who helped push along a shidduch and said that he's entitled to the money, even though it's family. And there was such a shaila that happened hundreds of years ago. There was a guy who thought of an appropriate match for his widowed sister-in-law, and he was involved in researching the shidduch and arranging, that they should meet. And when the couple got engaged, this fellow, said, told the professional shadchan who was actually involved with it, that I expect half of the shadchanus money, because you may have been the one that was seeing it through and that was involved in it, but I'm the one that thought of the idea for my widowed sister-in-law, and I got the ball rolling a little bit with this. And the professional shadchan said, because you're her brother-in-law, that's your job, meaning that's just what family does for each other. You're not a shadchan, you don't get paid shadchan. So they asked the shayla to the Chavis Yair, And the Chavis Yair said that he's a Shadchan also. Even family members are entitled to Shadchanos. My son's Shadchan, my son and daughter-in-law Shadchan, was my sister. So she's entitled. When I saw this Shaila, when I got this Shaila about the $7,000 from each side, I realized I might owe my sister a lot of money because we did not get her anything near, anything approaching the $7,000. From each side. So let's talk a little bit about why. There's all this discussion about Shadchan money. Where does it come from? So it's important to realize that it's not unique. It's not a unique job. Meaning all a Shadchan essentially is an agent, right? Meaning a Shadchan is when you want to buy a house, what do? You call a real estate agent. And what does a real estate agent do? They know where all the houses are that fit your criteria of what you're looking for. And they find a house for you. They show it to you. If it works out, obviously there's a fee that they pay for their services. My son and daughter-in-law were just on the phone when I went to say hi to my granddaughter earlier today. They were on the phone with a babysitting agency. What is a babysitting agency? There's some guy that that knows where all the babysitters are and finds someone. Do you want someone with references? That will cost you this much. If you want someone without references, that might murder your baby. That will cost you this much. If you want to, right? They have all sorts of different different, and they make the shidduch, and then what do they? Then they charge X amount. In the professional world, it's called a headhunter, right? You're looking for a job, and there's someone that knows. There was a guy in the yeshiva, a very sweet guy, was telling me at a chasna, he was asking a shayla. He wanted to know, he has a friend who just started a business, and he said that his friend asked him if he could dedicate 1 or 2 hours of his learning every night for the hatzlach of this business. So he wanted to know, do I lose something by dedicating my learning for the zchus of the hatzlach of that that business? So I said, just out of curiosity, what type of business is it? So he said, it's like a shadchan for jobs. I'm like, you mean like a headhunter? Like a shadchan is like a headhunter for shidduchim, right? But I guess it all depends on a person's frame of reference, right? When your frame of reference is the yeshiva and your chaverim, so a headhunter is a shadchan for jobs. But in the rest of the world, a shadchan is a headhunter for shidduchim, for matchmaking. Okay, Agav, what's the answer to that shayla? Should he? He said, "Do I lose schar in my limud if I learn a couple of hours a night in the zchus of his business?" It's an interesting question. Okay, but maybe for a different time. So the Ramah in Chosh Mishpat in Reish Samach Dalet Siv Zayin says that you absolutely have to pay a shadchan fee, just as you would a real estate broker, you have to pay a shadchan also. There are rabbanim that will not be mesarer kiddushin until you took care of the shadchan. Meaning, just like in our yeshiva, we have rabbanim that will not be, many rabbanim will not be mesarer kiddushin until you did the RCA halachic prenup. So put that on your to-do list for when you get married one day. Right? That's an important thing to do. There are rabbanim that will not be mesarer kiddushin until you took care of the shadchan. Now, according to the Ramah, l'chora, so someone pointed out in an article about this, according to the Ramah, l'chora, a shadchan's right to money is greater than a doctor's right to charge money for his services in a certain sense. So, even though it, for whatever reason, where we come from, it strikes people the wrong way. Like, what do you mean? A person did a chesed for you. Why should they charge for me? You have to realize it's a chesed that takes time and it takes energy and it takes thought, and no one would do it, or many fewer people would do it if there was no reward, especially the people that spend Yomim V'Layla doing it, the people that spend many, many, many hours doing it. And there's nothing wrong with a shadchan requesting payment for services rendered, just like anybody else, an attorney, an accountant, anybody else would ask for money. They don't do it for free, even though it's really nice to do someone else's taxes for them. That's a beautiful chesed to do for a person. But the accountant has the right to say that they would like to get paid. Now, the Gemara, so where does that come from, that brokerage fees are something that you have to pay for? So the Gemara talks about it, but Metzia Daf Samach Gimlam Beis, the Gemara talks about paying a broker's fee to the person who arranges a real estate or a sale of merchandise, and this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat in a few places, and it's standard business practice, so it's not something that should be surprising. Now, if the Shadchan is Mochel, What if they're just so thrilled that they made the shidduch and they're so excited and it's your sister, it's whatever who made the shidduch, and then they're not interested in the gift, they're just so they're mochel, then in a chinami, there's no obligation to pay. Just like if your accountant says, I want to do your taxes because I love you so much and I want to take care of you, and I would never take money from you, you're such a dear friend, so that's fine, then you don't owe him any money. Rav Shturmbach has a tshuva where he says that the Pischei Tshuva writes in Eben Ezer Simin Nun that if the Shadchan is Mochel, then he does not, then it's the Mechila is Chal, and he can't later come back and say, oh, I changed my mind, I want money for the Shidduch. Rav Shturmbach explains that that's only true if he explicitly says that I don't want money for the Shidduch, that I am not accepting money for the Shidduch. But if he says, if someone says, what's your fee? I don't do it for the money. But $10,000, please. If he just says, I don't do it for the money, that's not a mechila. That doesn't take away the responsibility of the couple to pay. He's just trying to relay the message that his main intention is for the mitzvah, but you still would have to pay. Rav Shurmach writes this way, Chelek Gimel, Simen Tafnun Zayin Os Gimel. If he says that he's totally mochel, then he's not allowed to go and demand payment later on. However, if he continues to work on the shidduch and he continues to do more work, well, then he could charge for that. Meaning, I was mochel everything up until now. But if the couple needs a little more coaching, a little more helping through, so then he could charge for that as well. Okay, but none of that is so nogeh to our shaila. What's our shaila really? What's the nekuda of our shaila? Of course, you pay a shadchan. What's the nekuda here? What? The nekuda over here is yoreh tochsa de shel chaveiro, that I didn't ask this young chassan didn't ask the shadchan to be a shadchan. The shadchan reached out to him and did it without him asking to do it. So what do you have to pay? And if you have to pay, what do you have to pay when the person reaches out to you and you don't reach out to them? So the halacha is that when someone gives you some sort of benefit unsolicited that you would normally pay for, you do have to pay for it. That's called Yoreh Tochsa de Shel Chaveiro, but Metzia Daf Kuf Aleph, that if someone goes to my house when I'm not there and paints the whole thing really nicely and mows my lawn and does all, so things that I would normally pay for, then I have to pay for them. Now, how much do you have to pay Yoreh Tochsa de Shel Chaveiro? So you pay as much as you benefited. You pay the hana'ah. And if he did work for you that would normally require you to hire somebody, you have to pay him the market value for hiring someone for that work. That's a Babetzia Daf Ayin Vav, and if you look in Choshe Mishpat some Shinayin Hey, that's where this is discussed. Now, does it make a difference? So once you're telling me I have to pay anyway the market value when a person is Yoreh Tochsa de Shel Chaveiro, so is there any nafkamina if I approach the Shadchan or the Shadchan approach me? So there may be a couple of significant nafkaminas. First nafkamina is, when do I owe the money? If the Shadchan solicited me, then the time that I'm required to pay the shadchan depends on whatever the minhag hamakom is, right? And if the minhag hamakom is that people don't pay the shadchan until the wedding, then it's considered a marriage expense that you pay at the wedding, and you wouldn't pay it at the engagement. A lot of times the shadchan shows up to the vart, right? Mazel tov, ready to collect, right? So are they allowed to collect then? So if there's a minhag hamakom that only gets paid at the wedding, then they only collect at the wedding. I would think that it's easier for people to pay it at the wedding than at the vart, because at the vart they don't yet realize that they're going to hemorrhage money as much as they're going to. Once they're making a wedding, they just realize, okay, I'm just going to be poor, and everything just goes out the window, and another $7,000. All right, what else? What do I get, a flower for that or something? Okay, maybe I'm still, I made a wedding once. Okay, so that's if that's the minhag hamakom. However, if you're the one that asked the shadchan, then you have to pay the shadchan when his or her job is complete. When is his or her job complete? Usually at engagement. They get engaged, now they're off to the races. Now they don't need you anymore to coach them through, oh, I have sveikos, I have this, I have that. Those sveikos normally are done by the time you get to engagement. Not always, not always. A lot of times after engagement, the girl notices something about the boy that she never noticed before, or vice versa, and there are all sorts of nerves and other things, and families start getting into fights and things like that, that the shadchan sometimes has to be the referee. But if the shadchan's job is over at the engagement, then it would be at the engagement. The Rama writes that the custom varies regarding when we pay the shadchan. Some pay right away at the engagement, but the engagement he holds means tanaim. When do we do the tanaim? Never really. We do a mock tanaim at the wedding, right? At the wedding, we just do a tanaim that says the father of the chasan and the father of the kala say, "Yay, we're at a wedding. Sign here," right? Meaning it doesn't really outline any real monetary obligations because it's too late by that time to outline any monetary obligations. Rav Schechter's thing, one of his newer things, is that he says you have to have two copies of the tanaim because it's a deal between the chasan's father and the kala's father. I remember at my son's wedding, I said, "Could Rebbe fill out the tanaim?" And he said, "Where's the second copy?" I said, "Where's the what?" He said, "Where's the second copy? It's a deal. They each need to have a copy of the contract." So of course I had a second copy because every rabbi brings a second copy of every document to the. So we were able to have one. So I told Rav Tani Cohen that Rav Schechter was makbid on two copies of the Tanaim. He said that is so interesting because at my wedding, you know how many copies of the Tanaim we had? Zero. There was no Tanaim at my wedding because it doesn't really matter because it wasn't. So we don't have a tanaim earlier. So it could be that the shadchan's job is over at the tanaim, which would mean that it's really over at the wedding. But that's a discussion that the poskim have. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that the minig is in his area was to pay the shadchan immediately following the tanaim. So the halacha would be that if you hire a worker, so you have to pay him as soon as he finishes his job. But if the worker is just yored the toch sadeh shel chavero, it could be that it's tali and minig hamakom, and that it's not. You don't have to pay him as soon as he finishes the job. Another nafkamin would be whether there is an isra of baltalin. If you hired the shadchan, if you don't pay him or her on time and they demand payment, then you're in violation of an isra da'oraisa of baltalin, that you didn't pay a worker on time. However, if you did not hire the shadchan, then you don't violate baltalin if you don't pay him or her on time, because they're not your employee. They don't work for you. They just decided to do a job for you. So you owe them money eventually, but it's not going to be an isra da'oraisa of baltalin. There are other poskim that say that since the responsibility of paying the shadchan really is on the couple, then there's no isra of baltalin if the shadchan is assuming that the parents are going to pay the fee, because the parents are technically not required to pay the fee anyway, right? Meaning it could be that the parents aren't in violation of baltalin because it's not their obligation, and the kids aren't in violation of baltalin because the shadchan has no expectation of the kids paying them because they don't have any money. So it could be that you get around baltalin that way. Once we're on that topic, who actually is obligated to pay the shadchan's fee? Is it the parents or is it the child? So some suggest in the Avnei Nezer and Chosh Mishpat Simen Lamed Vav that it's the young couple's obligation, which makes a lot of sense because they're the ones that are benefiting mostly from this, right? They're the ones that found their shidduch, so it makes a lot of sense. Others, though, say that since the parents are usually the ones that pay, so the shadchan expects payment from the parents, and therefore he has no claim against the young couple. That's what the Sefer Erech Shai writes in Chosh Mishpat Siman Kuf Pei Hei. Now, nowadays the convention is that the parents pay, but there's a major nafkamina between those two approaches, between whether the ikra obligation is on the parents or the ikra obligation is on the children. If the shadchan is unable to collect from the parents, so if the ikra obligation is on the children, so then he can go to the children and say, the parents don't want to pay me, but you owe me money. You just got all this wedding money, so you're going to go ask your rav, a shayla, do you have to give meister on the wedding money? Forget about meister, you have chovos, you got to pay me. It's okay that the parents are unable to afford it. That's unfortunate for you, but it's be'ikr, it's your obligation. But if you hold that be'ikr, the obligation is on the parents, then he has no recourse to go to the children and collect the money. I saw quoted that Rav Belsky, Zichron Levracha, said that the obligation is definitely a parent's obligation. And he says that even if the children no longer live at home and are financially independent, an masai, right? Meaning, at what point do you say that it stops being a parent's obligation? Let's say a couple gets married and the guy is 75 and the girl is 73. A beautiful young couple, right? So it's their parents' obligation. The 98-year-old parents have to pay the shadchan. It's the first marriage. First marriage, you know. So there's a shadchan. You know, so why you connect, whatever, right? So it's the parents. No, obviously not. That's ridiculous. The parents' obligation in such a case. So Belsky said, as long as the parents are involved in the shidduch process, you know, giving advice and coordinating the avart and coordinating the wedding and, you know, vetting the shidduch, whatever, you know, if they're involved in the shidduch. Probably when they're 73 and 75, the parents are probably not involved in the shidduch process anymore. So that's what he writes in Shaz Shuv Shulchan Alevi. Now, how much? Let's get to the real question. How much? How much do you have to pay a shadchan? So, the halach is Pesachei Teshuvah writes in Ebenezer and Siman Nun Sifkat and Tazayin, community standard. So what is community standard? It's interesting. You go around telling people a shadchan charges an exorbitant sum of money, $7,000 from each side. You will get a number of different reactions from people. Some people, and I tried this in my shul, where people come from all sorts of different places, some people are like, that's crazy. What, getting married should only be for the rich? Poor people shouldn't be allowed to get married now because you can't afford a shadchan? That's insanity. The person's doing a mitzvah. They should do a mitzvah l'shem, right? To only $7,000 a side? I thought it's like $25,000 a side, you know, depending where they come from, depending what their, you know, there are these shadchanim for the stars that they only deal with very, very rich people, and which makes sense that rich people will marry rich people. People have similar backgrounds, you know. There are a lot of times where there are shidduchim that, you know, are like a merger of, you know, whatever, right? So it happens sometimes, oftentimes, which makes, again, it makes a lot of sense from a certain perspective that people have similar backgrounds. But it goes by going rate. But sometimes very hard to determine a going rate. Not only that, sometimes it's hard to determine a going rate because who's going rate? Let's say there's a going rate in the five towns. I don't think there is, but let's say there is a going rate in the five towns. Because you can ask five different shadchanim in the five towns, you get five different rates. So let's say there is a going rate in the five towns. And there's a going rate in Yerushalayim, right? In by the Mir. What's the neighborhood over there? By Mei Sharim or whatever. Right? So I have a Talmud who his shadchan was Rav Resnick from the Mir. The Talmud is from Lawrence, and the girl, I think, is also either from Woodmere or from Lawrence, something like that. So which going rate do you go with? The going rate of the Mir Yeshiva? Or the going rate of the five towns, right? Not so possible to figure out the going rate, or the chassans from one place and the kalas from another place. So if the shadchan is asking for more than the going rate, then you don't have to pay it unless the shadchan did more than a typical shadchan does, or the shadchan told you in advance, this is my fee, you don't have to use me, but this is what I charge. Now, he's not allowed to charge, more than the going rate, but when there is no going rate, he's allowed to say that I'm a high end shadchan. He or she is allowed to say I'm a high end shadchan, and that's what I charge. However that makes you feel inside, right? He's allowed to say that, just like any other service. So at the end of the day, since we're getting close to the end over here, if there are different standards in different places, Pesachei Teshuvah says that the amount depends on the place, and if in the boy's place it's one amount and the girl's place it's another, the shadchanos is the lesser of the two. The Chutshani writes the shadchanos is the lesser of the two amounts if they have different minhagim, which might apply to the same place as well, that if in one place there are many different minhagim and it went unstated and no one knew, and this guy didn't know that this shadchan charges $7,000 a side and all the other shadchan in the neighborhood charge $3,600 a side or $1,500 a side, so then you would go with the lesser of the two rates. It could be, though, that if the shadchan called the girl and told the girl in advance exactly what she charges and neglected to tell the boy exactly what she charges, that the girl's family owes $7,000 and the boy's family owes the cheapest shadchan rate of that neighborhood. Right? It could be that, meaning the two don't necessarily line up. Each one's obligation could be different from each other, even though normally shadchan is split down the middle. Right, and also the nafkaminas we had before between you hiring the shadchan and the shadchan being yori the tok sadeu in terms of when you pay them, and if there's baltalin, could be different for the boy and the girl. If the girl approached the shadchan and the shadchan approached the boy, right? So it could be different rules for the different sides. Lemaisa, I asked Rav Willig just last week. There was a day that we were supposed to meet with the Encyclopedia Talmud people at in front of the Beis Medrash. So we were supposed to meet with Rav Shechter because they're honoring Rav Shechter in the 50th volume. So we were waiting for them to come, for the people in the Encyclopedia Talmud to come. So I don't know if you noticed, one day last week, like last Monday, all the Rebbeim were just like gathering in front of the Beis Medrash, and Rav Shechter was sitting there learning. So I had a chance to like hack up Rabbi Willig for like 20 minutes. It was great. I saved up all my shaylos and I was just hacking him about everything. And after 20 minutes, he looks at Rav Shechter. Rav Shechter's still sitting there learning. Didn't even notice that there were people around him. Was just like learning the whole time. And Rabbi Willig says, "Now you wonder why he knows Kala Torah Kula and the rest of us don't know anything." But I got to ask Rabbi Willig what he thought about this. And Rabbi Willig said, "You pay the going rate for a normal shadchan." I said, "How much is that?" He said, "Probably about $1,000. Wow, that's pretty cheap. One of my talmidim had a similar predicament with a shadchan that never told him how much it is, and he asked Rabbi Willig the same thing, and Rabbi Willig said, "The going rate. And if they want more from you, they could take you to Beis Din, and they're going to lose." Right? So that's, but obviously the moral of the story is, if you want to charge for your services, which you're allowed to do, and you're even allowed to charge a lot for your services if your services are very, very valuable, you got to tell people at the beginning what they cost, instead of springing it on them later or having different expectations. I don't think the shadchan did spring it on them later. I'm just saying that, I'm not saying that that's what the shadchan did. I have no idea what the shadchan did. But if you expect that money, then it's really, really helpful to tell people. It's the right thing to do, is to tell people in advance. Okay, everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.